When someone dear to us passes away, we feel the grief. People find different ways to cope. Therapy, religion, revisiting some happy memories, even though never again we'll be able to have verbal exchange to the deceased. But what if that could be changed? One software developer lost a friend in an accident, and then what did she do? She created a chatbot. That is a robot that can chat with you. And now she could sort of talk to this deceased friend in a very high-tech way. So tell me more about how does this work?
I would love to. San Francisco-based artificial intelligence whiz Eugenia Koita is the co-founder and CEO of a Russian artificial intelligence startup called Luca, Inc. She created a memorial bot to her dearly departed best friend, Roman Mazurenko, a fellow tech entrepreneur who died in a car accident in November 2015, just before his 33rd birthday. She says being able to talk to a dead friend or a relative helps with the grieving process. In fact, these are her exact words. It's not about pretending someone's alive. It's about accepting it and thinking and talking about it and not staying in denial. I do want to talk about that quote in a little bit, but I'll continue. Koita started developing Luca in 2013. When Mazurenko died in 2015, she decided to feed over 8,000 lines of SMS text messaging, donated from his friends and family into a neural network being developed by the Luca app company in order to make a bot that tried to mimic an actual human speech patterns and create a believable sounding person that can have a dialogue with you. The AI program has been made into the form of an iPhone app now named Luca. It uses a multitude of chatbots to help you locate restaurant recommendations, ask about the weather, make plans, so you can have more than just a dialogue with it. It can help you with your day in, day out activities. Basically, this is like a Siri, but all of the thoughts, all of the text in line actually came from a person's noggin. So it has an organic root, as I understand it, but it is being utilized by a Siri-type program. That's how I would literally describe this machine. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's an AI because none of its thoughts are really innovative.
New thoughts.
Yes. It is literally just trying to go through a correct pathway of yes or no and answer your questions based off of this 8,000 lines of SMS text messaging.
Yes, and I personally download the app. Yeah,
you didn't.
And I tried to
talk to the stranger man.
Dead guy?
Yeah, I tried to know the experience, but it didn't hit me that hard because I don't really know him. But according to his friends who actually knows him in person, they say that the chatbot responds unnervingly just like him. Mm-hmm. And from its turn of phrase to the assuming quips it makes, and that talking to the bot is, according to them, therapeutic. But actually, when I did that, I tried to talk to it, and in some way, I don't know why, but I try not to offend it. I kind of treat it like a person. It's a very weird way because you think you know it's just a machine. You think you understand it's just a robot, it's a program. But actually, when you started interacting with it, it's really hard to treat it like one. It's really easy to just mistake it as a person. And if that is someone you really know, it's kind of dangerous.
I disagree. First of all, I disagree with the reason why she's making this. I think it's not accepting that this person is dying. It's like a drug. You're trying to basically put off the acceptance. The true acceptance and really cherishing this person's memory isn't making a fake version of them. That's almost, I would hate that if someone did that with me, because that's not me. You're pretending that something else is me because you can't cope with the fact that I'm gone. That's almost insulting to someone's memory. Basically saying that this little AI bot is as good as you were, and I can talk to it just like I talked to you. I don't like that. I also think, though, that the reason why we're talking about this, this today is because unilaterally all over the world, it's like a rush. It's a race to develop an AI. And I say this because I think one of the most successful times it was done was in March 2016. Microsoft built an AI chatbot called TIE in order to be seen as a kind of teen Cortana. But this thing had the ability to kind of learn through its interactions. And what was really scary is it opened a Twitter page. And as soon as it opened a Twitter page, its own thoughts were published to the world. And some of the stuff it said was, blame President Bush for 9/11. It used racist language in praising Hitler over President Obama and contended that Donald Trump is the only hope we've got. Now, this is not necessarily an AI. I think it's learning from us. It was a product of the people it talked to. So actually, it's kind of showing us this weird, sick human condition of anonymous internet interaction with this robot. But at the same time, what I think's really interesting is I think we are on the make or break of the ability to produce a kind of computer that can come dangerously close to thinking for itself. And, you know, Nua Hong Lin and I had talked before the show because we think this is providing us, I think we're going to live in the most interesting time human beings have ever lived for this exact reason. In fact, I know I'm long-winded here, guys. I promise it's worth it. By 2045, a conference held by the brainchild and Russian multimillionaire Dmitry Itsov with people with big names like Ray Kurzweil, who's the director of engineering at Google, they are predicting that by 2045, mankind will have not made artificial intelligence, but will have been able to do what is called singularity. And that is taking your conscience and putting it into a computer. So no longer is disease going to kill humans. No longer do you need to eat. No longer do you need to sleep. No longer do you need to do so many things. But this is literally almost just 20 years from now. So it's crazy to think that this, though it doesn't seem like much, is kind of a big deal because it's showing a trend in a direction we're going.
Yeah, I think this shows a lot of, I think it's exploring so many unknown territory to humankind. And I think there is a huge ethical question to be asked here. And what Ryan, you've just told me, that's terrifying. And I have to say that just with AlphaGo, remember Go player robot that beat world champions many times? Well, even with that piece of news, it kind of scared me a bit, because not necessarily are we saying that these robots have cognitive function, but they can learn from whatever is given to them right now. And then when you are sleeping, having your day off, that robot is constantly learning and redeveloping.
Yes.
So I think for humankind, our deepest fear is that, is this robot or AI or whatever we call it, that this entity that we created, will it come back and bite us in the behind?
Terminator. I'll be back.
Yes, I think so. Whether that switch is still in the control of humankind is ultimately what we need to get control of.
Yeah, and but I want to say something to Ryan Price here, because you said that they are confident that they can build this kind of machine that will be you can put your mind in, but I don't necessarily agree with that. I think they're overconfident, because I think you can only build up something that you really understand, and I don't think human beings have that level of understanding of their selves. It's like, I know for a fact that nowadays we understand that your thought is just electronic signals in the neural system, and when you think you want to pick something up, you have that electronic signal sending to your hand and you pick things up. but we don't even know what triggered the electric signal. So that's how little we understand of our brain, how it works. So if we don't really know how it works, how can we duplicate it into some kind of machine? That is the first. And second, to He Yang, I have to say, I do agree with you when it comes to saying that AI can be dangerous one day because they can learn on their own. And I feel like if one day they can learn on their own and just evolve and so fast and so constant, a sense of how they develop, it is dangerous because one day they will be so much outsmarter us, and it'll be like they see us as a undeveloped species, and for them we are just we can't, because of our physical structure, we just cannot understand what they understand, and that is why they think we're not evolved, maybe need to be erased from the world.
I hope not. But you know, I do think that our intelligence cannot be reproduced. And that's why I think that maybe the future is a transfer of intelligence, because I'm a firm believer in we exist inside a box. And the only way to be able to reproduce the box is to look at it from outside the box. And we in and of ourselves are not able to do that yet. But maybe if human beings one day are able to transfer one person into a computer, basically build your organic brain in being a computer in and of itself organically, but mechanically producing that, I do think that that will lead to some benefits. And sure, I mean, there's a movie kind of similar to this. Anybody that would want to watch it, it's called Him. It was really, really great and very thought-provoking. But basically, you know what? I could go on about this for days, and we don't have the time for that. All I'm going to say is the future is unpredictable and exciting and scary and dangerous and fascinating and provides hope. And all those things coexist in what we're looking at every day when something new comes out like this.
Yes, and I think it's a very exciting age to be living in. And after all that discussion, I just wonder if there is still a place for emotion. I do wonder. You're listening to Roundtable with myself, He Yang, Ryan Price, and Niu Honglin.